Chapter 7 is about the treatment of electrostatic and gravitational long-range forces and potentials. Well, we know both as a gravitational force and by Coulomb's law, electrostatic interactions between monopoles have a 1 over r decay behavior. And so the 1 over r function decays quite slowly. I mean, if you want to evaluate it up to machine precision, right, let's say 10 to the minus whatever, 14, you would have to go out a distance which is 10 to the power plus 14, so a huge distance. So that means if we have now a system of particles that are interacting by a 1 over r potential, essentially we have to include in our calculation all possible pairwise interactions. We will practically never have kind of particles that are separated by such a huge distance that the interaction is completely negligible. So of course, principally, that's very simple. I mean, the energy, of course, then is given by this equation 146. So I use here mi and mj to denote the mass of particle I and particle j. Later on, we will frequently also, instead of kind of considering the case of gravitational forces, we will consider the case of electrostatic forces. And then just we have to replace the masses by the charges that will then be, of course, called qi and qj. So to calculate this interaction energy from equation 146, of course, we have to write just an extremely simple computer program, which is shown below, which is kind of some less than 10 lines. And you see, I mean, you have a double loop. The variable j goes over all particles. The variable I essentially goes over all particles. I mean, we just exploit the fact that the interaction between I and j is identical to the interaction between j and I. So, okay, we sum essentially only over half of the partners, possible partners. But in any case, I mean, you see immediately just formally that this little computer program has a scaling behavior which is n squared, right? Which makes sense because, as I said before, if you have n particles, we have essentially n squared interactions and we have to take into account all of them. So if now the number of particles is kind of not too big, if you have, I don't know, 100 or 1,000 particles, probably the best way is really to calculate it in that way. But if you have now really very, very large systems, like if you have a billion particles or something like that, then actually this quadratic scaling behavior, right, shown in equation 147 is very problematic. And you know, for instance, if you do simulations in of galaxies, also in galaxies, they have huge numbers of stars, and there indeed, then you cannot use any more equation 146 to calculate the energy and forces in such a system. So that was a motivation for developing the Barnes-Hutt algorithm, which is kind of one of the first algorithms to treat 1 over r interactions in an efficient way. There are many others because, of course, yeah, those 1 over r interactions, they can be found at so many places in physics, chemistry, material science. So those methods are very important, and I will actually discuss several of them in the course. Yeah, so the first one is a Barnes-Hutt algorithm, which was actually developed for the simulation of galaxies originally. So the central idea of this Barnes-Hutt algorithm is quite simple. It is just based on the observation that if you have an observation point that's far away from a certain number of source points, right, that's kind of shown in this picture on page 157, then of course we know that what we see on the observation point is not, we don't see all the details of the source region. Like if from Earth, if you look at two stars which are very far away and very close, I mean, they might look like just one bigger star instead of two stars. And so that's exploited here in a systematic way. So if you have a kind of a collection of stars, of individual stars, which are far away from the observation point, then we can replace this group of stars by something which later on I will call it a superstar, right? This superstar then of course has a property that it is centered at the center of mass of our original group of stars, and its mass, of course, is the sum of the masses of all the individual stars in the original group. Okay, so how does it work? Let's go to the next page. So first, we subdivide our, the very first step. Okay, we put all our stars into a big box. And then we start subdividing this big box recursively, as is shown here on page 158. So you see here on the left-hand side, we have divided our big box into four sub-boxes. And now all the sub-boxes that still contain more than one particles, they are subdivided further, again into four sub-boxes. And this process is continued until, and that's shown then on the very right-hand side and in the top row of those three boxes, until we have only just one single star in each box. This subdivision, of course, also can be represented as a tree structure, and the corresponding tree structures right there are shown below. Okay, now comes the next step. Now essentially we go again like in the opposite direction. We take now the different stars in the smallest boxes. Like we take the stars number 2, 5, and yeah, I have problems reading it. Okay, it is. Let's look. Okay, we take the stars number 2, 3, and 5, right? They are kind of in the smallest boxes that are found in the system. And we replace it now by a superstar, right? Which is shown now here in the middle figure of those three figures. So you see, you have there a big circle. In the box, for instance, that contained the particles 2, 3, and 5, right? The small boxes have now disappeared. And we have this superstar, which is representing now those three original stars, which is the number 2, 3, and 5. Yeah, the same thing is done with stars number 8 and 9, right? They are also replaced by a superstar. And then, okay, I again do that recursively. So that's then the last panel on the right hand side, where I have now just three big superstars, and then okay, there's still one individual star, because in this box on the lower left hand side, right from the very beginning, I had just one single star. Okay, good. Of course, now those superstars, again, also they can be put in those tree-like structures, right? So on page 160, now look at our tree. We see that, for instance, on the node where we branch into the three different stars, 2, 3, and 5. At that point, for instance, we have this superstar, which is made out of the individual stars 2, 3, and 5, right? We could give it a special name. I didn't do that. Now comes, of course, the important step, namely to calculate energies and forces. So you see now here, I have now in the center of this figure on page 161, I have this red star. So actually, each star at a certain point on this algorithm has to become the red star, that means a star at the center, for which I calculate the energy and the forces. Okay, so what do I do? I have now the red star, and first I consider other stars that are kind of close by, right? You can, for instance, see whether they are close by or not by looking at the tree structure. Now here those three green stars, they are close by, so that means in this case I have just to calculate the exact 1 over r interactions to get the energy, or 1 over r squared interactions to get the forces. But now you see there are no more other individual stars. Now if I go to a larger length scale, if I go from a length 2d to a length of 4 times d, so that's this middle red box now, then you see there I have now to sum just interactions of the red star now with superstars. Let's say here in this box, let's call it superstars of the first order, right? A superstar of the first order is made out of stars, and then a superstar, for instance, of second order is made out of superstars already which are of first order, right? Because that's what we do recursively, or what we did recursively in the previous step. Yeah, okay, so I calculate the interaction of my red star with all those superstars of the first order, and then in the next step actually I go to superstars of the second order, right? And I sum here also interactions. Now, if I go from superstars of, let's say, first order to superstars of second order, of course, we know that the superstars of second order are representing many, many more original stars than the superstars of first order. Actually, the number of stars that are represented by first order, second order, third order, and so on, superstars, is growing exponentially, which means that the number of interactions that I have to calculate can grow only logarithmically, very weakly. So it means I have to now, to get the force or energy of the red star, I have to sum only over a relatively small number of interactions, right? Because most of the interactions are kind of hidden in, I mean, of the real interactions are hidden in kind of the superstars of higher order. Yeah, of course, what we have seen on page 161, of course, you can also, again, carry it over into the tree structure, and it's shown here, right? You have here the red star, and for all the stars that I can obtain that by just going up by one level and then go down, I mean, there I calculate also exact interactions. If I have to go up by more than one level, right, then I already consider only superstars of first order, and if I have to go up even higher, I consider only superstars of second order. Yeah, so we see now, okay, what is the scaling, right? I mean, as we said, if you go back to page 161, for the red star, I have a number of interactions that's only growing logarithmically with respect to the total number of stars in the system. Of course, as I said before, every star has to become kind of, in quotation mark, a red star at some point in this algorithm. So that means in total, I have a scaling behavior which is n log n. Yeah, and that, of course, that's much, much better than the original scaling behavior of the trivial algorithm, which was n squared. So with this n log n scaling, you can actually treat fairly large systems. Well, this Barnes-Hutt algorithm actually turns out to be not very accurate typically. You can of course make it more accurate by just, in if you go back to our picture on page 161, I mean, if this distance d that I have introduced here, which then tells us from which distance on I consider superstars instead of individual stars, and from which distance then 4 times d I consider superstars of second order and not anymore superstars of first order. If I, of course, increase this distance, then of course my result will become more accurate. But of course, then it's also clear that the numerical effort is increasing. Actually, it's then increasing quite strongly. So for that reason, actually, as I said already, the Barnes-Hutt algorithm is typically used in applications where you don't need very high accuracy. And that's actually typically the case in the simulation of gravitational systems, whereas if you simulate charge systems, you need typically more accuracy. Yeah, and actually more accuracy then, for instance, we will get it with the next algorithm that we will then discuss in the next lecture, which is then the fast multiple method.